Sanchari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayam Vishnu Pai Paramahamsa Parivraja Gacharya Ashutarashata Shri Shimari Savayan Grace Shila Prabhupada Ki Jaya Raja Granta Shima Bhavatam Ki Gau Primanandi. All glories to the Sumana Vodis, all glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga. Om Aknana Tmirandasya Nananjana Shalakaya Chakshunun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam yena bhutale Swayam rupakadamayam Adati svapadantikam Vancha kalpaturubhyascha Kripa sindubhyarevacha Bolo Patita nam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Why we chant invocation mantra in the beginning of the class? Why we do it? Do you know why we chant? No, why we chant the invocation mantra? Get the mercy of Vaishnavas. Why else we chant? Pay respects. Invoke auspiciousness. Any other answers? Yes, these are all correct answers. Get mercy of God, Guru, Vaishnavas. Understand? Bhakti, previous acharyas. So the speaker isn't the only one who needs the mercy. Hearers need the mercy too. So I'm always chanting. Many times I'm chanting by myself. Everyone is getting adjusted, fixing their hair, fixing their dhoti, getting their notebook out, drawing, so many other things everyone is doing. But as I need the mercy because I have to speak, you need the mercy because you have to hear. Probably the hearers need more mercy, isn't it? Because speaker is at least has to know something by which he's giving the class. But the hearers may not know anything. Dull-headed, isn't it? Isn't it? Dull. And, you know, the speaker is obliged to stay focused because he has a good class. But the hearer is not obliged to stay focused. He can space out, as many of you do, isn't it? I also do, and I have to hear from others. Because we don't like to hear from others. We only want to hear from our mind, isn't it? So, as I need mercy, for which I have to chant the Mangala Charanam, we do a much reduced version. You probably need more mercy in this sense, because you have to hear. And if I'm in a hearer's position, I need more mercy because I have to hear. Therefore, you're asking, praying to spiritual master, Srila Rupa Goswami, previous acharyas, the Supreme Lord, Bhakti Devi, etc. Please, let me get opportunity to hear something. Usually, speaker says one thing, another thing is heard. That's if you hear anything whatsoever. Usually, nothing is heard. That is the normal situation. If anything is heard, it is something opposite of what was actually spoken. So that means the hearers needs just as much mercy also, isn't it? So when you chant the Mangala Charana, it's for everyone. It's not just for the speaker. Understand? Not that time period is not for adjusting dhotis and fixing hair and cleaning off the glasses and getting the notebooks out and reading the previous notes while the speaker is doing that. It's for everyone to do. Understand? Understand? Yes. Understanding? Can you understand my language? You can draw also in your class. You will do anyway. But it's for everyone's mercy. Everyone needs the mercy. Isn't it? Understand? Understand? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th Canto, Chapter 3, Verse Number 17. Tasyatmatantrasya herer adishitu Parasyamayadipatir mahatmana Prayena dutta ihavai manoharash Charanti tadrupa guna swabhava. Tasya tantrantasya hare adishitu. Parasamaya dipate mahatmanah. Mother. Tasyatma tantrasya herer adishitu. Parasmaya dipater mahatmana. Prayena dutta rihavai manoharash. Tasya, of him, Atmatantrasya, being self-sufficient, not dependent on any other person. Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Adhishitu, who is the master of everything. Parasya, the transcendence. Maya Adipati, the master of the illusory energy. Maha Atmanaha, of the supreme soul. Prayena, almost. Duta, the order carriers. Iha, in this world. Vai, indeed. Manoharaha, pleasing in their dealings and bodily features. Charanti, they move, tat, of him, rupa, possessing the bodily features, guna, the transcendental qualities, swabhava, and nature. Translation, purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is self-sufficient and fully independent. He is the master of everyone and everything, including the illusory energy. He has his form, qualities, and features. And similarly, his ordered carriers, the Vaishnavas, who are very beautiful, possess bodily features, transcendental qualities, and a transcendental nature almost like his. They always wander within this world with full independence. Purport, Yamaraj was describing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller. But the order carriers and Yamaraj were very eager to know about the Vishnu Dutas, who had defeated them in their encounter with Ajamila. Yamaraj therefore stated that the Vishnu Dutas resemble the Supreme Personality of Godhead in their bodily features, transcendental qualities, and nature.
In other words, the Vishnu Dutas or Vaishnavas are almost as qualified as the Supreme Lord. Yamaraj informed the Yamadutas that the Vishnu Dutas are no less powerful than Lord Vishnu. Since Vishnu is above Yamaraj, the Vishnu Dutas are above the Yamadutas. Persons protected by the Vishnu Dutas, therefore cannot be touched by the Yamadutas. Okay, Srila Prabhupada Ki. So, three questions were asked, we discussed many times now. Third question was about what is the position of the Vishnu Dutas. The Yamadutas were curious about the Vishnu Dutas, those persons who had obstructed their taking Ajamil. So, in answer to the first two questions, we heard already that the Supreme Lord is the one controller behind everything. Not only is he the controller of the results of actions in the gunas for the conditioned souls, although that control may be coming through smaller controllers, he is the ultimate lawmaker and therefore the ultimate controller. He is the transcendental autocrat who's above all other controllers. Everyone is subordinate to him. His control is comprehensive because everything ultimately is him. It's a part of his nature. It can't be separated from him. And he has the power to manipulate his energies however he likes. So the position of Bhagavan was told. That's what we heard previously. Now the position of Vaishnavas will be told in two verses. This verse, the next verse. The position of Vaishnavas are told. And then the verses following that, the position of Bhakti is told. Don't space out. The position of Bhakti is told. So these three truths are non-different from each other. Understand? Bhagavan, Bhakti, Bhakta. Understand? There's one truth, actually. One truth, three categories, and one truth. One truth with three categories. Understand? It's one tattva, actually. Bhagavan, Bhakti, Bhakta. Understand? To discuss any one of these truths means to include the other truths, the other two aspects of this truth. Understand? So if you discuss bhakti, that means you must necessarily be discussing Bhagavan and Bhakta, right? Because bhakti takes shelter of a bhakta and has Krishna as the object of bhakti. Understand? Or you can say opposite way, bhakti has shelter in Bhagavan and then takes a bhakta as the object of worship, isn't it? For a devotee, Krishna is the object of worship, Vishya Vigraha, understand? And for Krishna, the devotee is the object of worship, Vishya Vigraha. These two things are there, Vishya Vigraha, Ashraya Vigraha. Two words, understand? Vishya Vigraha, let's mention nectar devotion, Ashraya Vigraha. Vishya Vigraha means the object of devotion, the object of devotion. And Ashraya Vigraha means the shelter of devotion. Where does devotion live? Understand? Where does devotion live? Where does devotion live? In the heart of devotees or in the heart of the Supreme Lord, isn't it? Because ultimately, bhakti is a transformation of the Swarup Shakti of Krishna. Therefore, we say love of Godhead, not love for Godhead. We say love of Godhead, right? Because bhakti is ultimately coming from God. It's of Him, and it's invested into the living entity. So bhakti takes shelter or lives in the house of bhakta or Bhagavan. So when bhakti lives in the house of a bhakta, then the object of worship is Bhagavan. When bhakti is living in the house of Krishna, then the object of worship is bhakta. Understand? So when you talk about bhakti, bhakti means these other truths must be there. Ashraya Vigraha, Vishaya Vigraha. Understand? Vishaya Vigraha means what? Michael. I already told. What does it mean? No, I told this morning, just now, 5 seconds ago. We are acutely disqualified in Kali Yuga, huh? The object of worship. So object of worship is either Bhagavan or Bhakta, depending on where Bhakti is residing. So if we talk about Bhakti, you must be talking about Bhakta and Bhagavan. If you talk about Bhakta, then you must be talking about Bhakti and Bhagavan. And if you talk about Bhagavan, you must be talking about Bhakti and Bhakta. Understand? Simultaneously, it's one truth, actually. They all have to be discussed together, not separate truths. Understand? So when Krishna appears, he necessarily comes with his entourage, right? When the absolute truth appears in his world, his entourage is with him. Or when his entourage comes, then Bhagavan must be there also, because they're inseparable truth. Just like you cannot separate fire and heat, they're inseparable reality. So also, bhakti, Bhagavan, bhakta are inseparable reality. So when the guru makes his appearance, or Vaishnava makes his appearance, real Vaishnava, pure Vaishnava, that means Bhagavan has made his appearance. Understand? Similarly, when Bhagavan makes his appearance, that means bhakta must have also appeared. Understand? Otherwise, it is not possible. So when Srila Prabhupada made his appearance in America, for example, 1966, in the world, of course, but in context of 1966, to start the Hare Krishna movement, Bhagavan was also there. You cannot see. Why you cannot see? None of us can see, actually. I cannot see also. Why we cannot see? Anarthas, huh? Yes, because bhakti, Bhagavan, bhakta is adokshaja plane. You know, adokshaja plane means the plane beyond the central perceptions. Jaga avyakta murtina. Krishna says, I quoted this yesterday, I pervade the whole world in order to maintain it, but no one can see it because my murti, my form, is beyond sense perception. Right? That's obvious. Krishna's form is beyond, but the bhakta is also, he's beyond sense perception. Understand? Bhakti is also beyond sense perception. This whole tattva, bhakti, Bhagavan, bhakta, all of them are part of the adokshaja plane, beyond the plane of material sense perception. Therefore, it's hard to comprehend them. Understand? Understand? Simple point. They are hard to comprehend. Therefore, the Yamadutas cannot comprehend. So, Yamaraj is explaining now this tattva. Bhakti tattva, Bhagavan tattva, bhakta tattva. They are one inseparable truth, three categories of one truth. He has to explain it to them because it's hard to understand. Why is it hard to understand? Because it's a dokshaja plane, beyond the plane of material sense perception, right? What is that verse? Savayapum samparo dharmo yato bhaktir. Say that? Bhakti adokshaja. Bhakti is adokshaja. So just as bhakti is adokshaja, Bhagavan, of course, is adokshaja. And bhakta is also adokshaja. Even when he seems to have a material body, you can understand. Therefore, committing so much aparad, isn't it? You don't understand who is a bhakta, who is not a bhakta. So you commit so much offense. Such was the case with the Yamadutas. They didn't understand that Ajramil had now become bhakta. So he was, in a sense, not completely, but in a sense, he was part of the adokshaja plane, because bhakti was coming in him by chanting the holy name of Krishna. But because bhakti, Bhagavan, bhakta are all part of the adokshaja plane, it's hard to comprehend that. Therefore, Yamadutas made a mistake trying to arrest him. Understand? Standpoint. These truths are not very easy to comprehend. Therefore, we first heard about Bhagavan, right? This aspect. So we heard that Bhagavan is beyond the gunas, therefore hard to understand. And so he's trying to describe what is the position of Bhagavan. Now he will speak about the bhaktas. Now two verses, this verse and next verse, he speaks about the bhaktas. They also hard to understand. They also hard to understand. What is that? Tanar Kriya Mudra Vakya. Vigneha Nabujoy. For those who have bhakti to Krishna, then their vakya, their speech, their words, their mentality, Vigneha Nabujoy. Even if you are a learned person, you cannot understand it. Vigneha Nabujoy. Even if you're learned, you cannot understand. Understand? If you're not learning, even if you're learning, you cannot understand. It is very subtle topic. The only way you can understand is you have to also enter into the adokshaja plane. Understand? If you come to the adokshaja plane, then you can start to perceive it directly. Pratyaksha avagamam dharmyam. Krishna says, by his bhakti dharma, then pratyaksha avagamam, you can get direct perception of that truth. Otherwise, it's very hard to understand. A good example, Mahaprabhu was told this. There was, when Mahaprabhu was traveling through South India, there was one Ram Bhakta. In South India, many are Ram Bhaktas, so he met one Ram Bhakta who was there. And this Ram Bhakta began lamenting profusely that Ravana kidnapped Sita. So Maharu said, no, do not worry that Ravana has kidnapped Sita, because she is apakrita vastu. She is spiritual substance in which no one can actually capture. It's not possible. Later on, Maharu went further on to Kurma, I think, and then he found one passage in the Kurma Purana, where it's mentioned, this is the exact same point that he was making to this Brahmana, that Sita was part of apakrita vastu, same as a dokshaja plane, transcendental. And so he came back, when he was traveling back that direction, He informed this Brahmana of that reality, to which the Brahmana became supremely happy. It was not possible for Ravana to capture Sita, because she is a dakshaja playing, apakrita vastu. So what did he capture? He captured a shadow of Sita, not the actual Sita. It was a shadow form of Sita. He could not actually touch Sita, because? Why he could not touch? A dakshaja playing, apakrita, transcendental. Understand? Very simple. Not too difficult. But because it's transcendental, very hard to understand. It has to be told by persons who are on that plane. Understand? Only those who have bhakti can describe this truth. Bhakti reveals Bhagavan. Bhakti reveals bhakta. Otherwise, you can have no vision of them. So unless there's an increase of bhakti in our heart, we do not understand what is Vaishnava, what is God. It's not possible to understand. You understand this point? Not possible. We will simply speculate. Without an increase in bhakti, you cannot understand these realities. Now, Yamaraj is trying to explain, but ultimately he has to explain, ultimately, bhakti, because bhakti will give you direct understanding of these realities. Otherwise, tendency will still be to commit mistake. There has to be increase in bhakti to understand the adokshaja plane, because it's very subtle, understand? Subtle, just like fingernails. You cannot see your fingernail growing. Even if you keep your eyelid open, you like tape it open, and for a few days you try to watch your fingernail, you will not see it grow. Only when it's time to cut it, you can understand that it is grown. Same with your hair. No one can see the hair growing. Because it's so subtle. And it's so subtle. Although hair is growing, you cannot see it. It's very subtle. So also this truth, bhakti, bhakta, bhagavan, is very subtle. You cannot understand it. It's too subtle. Only way you can understand it is if you enter into that plane. How you enter into that plane? By increase of bhakti. Understand? You understand this point? It's very simple. Yatha yatatma pramikyate so mapunya gata shavana bidhanai tata tata pashyati vastu shukshman chakshur yatai vanjana sampryuktam. I like to quote this verse. Bhagavatam, Krishna says, only when to the degree that the atma is purified, atma pramikyate so, the atma is purified of anarthas, etc. Purified, how he's purified, by what sadhana he's purified? Ma punya gata shavana vidana. By the sadhana of hearing and chanting about Krishna, whose narrations are pious. Ma punya. Transcendentally pious, not ordinarily pious. Srimatam swagata Krishna, punya shavana kirtan. Transcendentally pious. Then, to the degree the atma is purified by the sadhana of hearing and chanting Krishna's pious narrations, Tata, to that degree, pashyati vastu shukshman, he can see this vastu, which is very subtle, shukshman. He can see bhakti, bhagavan, and what's the other one? Bhakta. He can see, to the degree his heart is purified by bhakti, sadhana, the sadhana of hearing chanting about Krishna. Just like the eye, then an example is given, chakshurya taivanjana samriya. Just like if you put ointment on the eye, you can see things very subtle. Or for example, if you put glasses on the eyes, or you see through a microscope, things that are hard to see. Understand? So there needs to be an increase of devotion to understand these truths. Still, they will try to explain to us. Yamaraj is a bhakta, having bhakti, so he understands this truth directly. Now he's trying to explain it to the Yamadutas. You can imagine how challenging it must be. As when the spiritual master speaking to us, is the same. Huge, impossible challenges there. Yamadutas are in the mode of ignorance. How he will explain this truth? Anyway, he is merciful. He is telling them anyway. And they will get some part of it. They will get. But you can imagine the obstacle. Just like we have this, what is this saying? Blind man touching an elephant, right? You know this analogy Prabhupada told me. Blind man touching an elephant. So each blind man is touching different aspects of the elephant. And they're getting different misconceptions, right? One is thinking it's a rope. One is thinking it's like a wall. One is thinking it's like a snake, etc. Right? Now, if they all come together and put their different, then is it become more clear? Or become more bewildering, isn't it? That is modern science. Everyone speculates their own theories. Then they come together in a conference. Then it becomes more bewildering. So then there's one person who can actually see what an elephant is. Right? So he has eyes to see that. But if he has to explain it to the blind man, then how he will explain? It is a huge challenge, isn't it? How he will explain all those things to the blind man? He can see what an elephant actually is, but how he will explain it to the blind man, who all have their own misconceptions about what it is? How he explain? Very challenging. You have to be empowered to explain it. And they had to be empowered to understand. Understand this point. He has to be empowered, Krishna Shakti, right? Krishna Shakti Vina Nahitara Parvatam. Without being empowered, he cannot explain it. And without being empowered, you cannot understand it also. There needs to be empowerment to speak it, to comprehend it and speak. There needs to be empowerment to understand also. Get my point? Therefore, like I mentioned beginning of class about Mangalacharna, someone has to be empowered to speak, so he is invoking the mercy. Someone has to be empowered to understand, therefore we also invoke the same mercy, isn't it? Otherwise, you can understand. If the blind man has to explain to an elephant, what is this? If the seeing man has to explain to the blind man what is the elephant, how he will do? How will they understand? What is the answer? Yes. The answer is he has to be empowered. That empowerment is called Bhakti Shakti. And you have to be empowered to understand. That is also Bhakti Shakti. Guru is... by coming in his presence, he's giving some of his bhakti shakti to you by which you can begin to comprehend the truth. And he has bhakti shakti by which he is also understanding it. Are you getting these points? So this Yamaraj is explaining this truth. Bhagavan, bhakta, bhakti. Three categories of one truth. These are nine different truths. So now we're hearing about the bhakta. So what did he say? First he opens up here, describing the position of the Supreme Lord. The Lord is Atmatantrasya. He is self-sufficient. He is not dependent upon anyone. Then he's Adishitu. Adishitu means he is the master of everything. Maya Adipate, he is also the master of the illusory energy. That is the position of God. He's already described this earlier also. He is just, again, mentioning this point. And then he says Prayena. Prayena means Prayena Dutta. The Vishnu Dutas are almost like the Lord. Prayena means almost. So the Vishnu Dutas are almost like him. That's why I said it's one truth. They're all in the Adokshaja plane. The Vishnu Dutas, they are Prayena. They are almost like him. And then he cries, Manohara. They're pleasing in their dealings and bodily features. And Tat Rupa Guna Swabhava. Tat means the Supreme Lord. Tat Tvamasi. Tat means the Supreme Lord. Tvam means the Jiva. Tattvamasi, you know this Vedic aphorism, and person is Tattvamasi, you are that. That is true, you are that, because you're Shakti of the Lord, which is non-different from the Lord. Tat, Pradartha means knowledge about Him, the Supreme Lord. Tvam Pradartha again means knowledge about the soul. Understand? Tat Pradartha Gnan, Tvam Pradartha Gnan, understand? Tat Pradartha Gnana means knowledge about Supreme Lord. Tvam Padartha Gyan means knowledge about the souls. Understand? So, Tat means the last line says, Tat Rupa Guna Swabhava. So, of him, Rupa Guna Swabhava. Rupa means form, Guna means qualities, Swabhava means their nature, is like his, the Supreme Lord. These Vishnu Dutas, they're almost like him, having same bodily form. In fact, they have same bodily form. Vishnudas also have four arms. They look just like Narayana. We heard earlier on in the sixth canto, they could conceivably call themselves God because they actually look like God. They can say, I am God, and we will believe it also. If a Vishnuduta came and appeared before us and said, I am the Supreme Lord, we would believe it also because they look just like God. There are only a few distinctions between them and God. The Lord has a little hair chest. Understand? What is a hair chest called? Srivatsa? And he has a Kostuba jewel also that is adorning his beautiful form, which the Vishnudutas don't have. Otherwise, everything else looking the same. There was one demon was there. What was his name? Begins with a P. Pondrika. He also wanted to be the Supreme Lord. So he attached two wooden arms to his body and said, I am the Supreme Lord. And he came to the... He said, what is this Vishnu? Why are you worshiping? I am the Supreme Lord. So he came before Krishna and the Pandavas to fight. And when they saw that, they all busted up and started laughing. They immediately, They laughed very hard. Their stomach was hurting. What is this nonsense? He coming with two wooden arms. Then Krishna immediately threw his chakra and cut off his arms and then cut off his head. Finished. Very anticlimactic, as most of Krishna's fights are. You know, usually we like a good fight. You know, we watch like a martial arts movie or something, and it's like a good fight, and the protagonist is almost losing, then he finally wins at the end. It's very dramatic. But with Krishna, there is no drama. He just like slaps and guy is finished. Anyway, so was Pondruka's situation. He thought he will imitate Supreme Lord. Supreme Lord showed him. But the Vishnudutas, they actually tell Rupa Guna Swabhava. They actually look like God. They have same Rupa. Their qualities are like God. And their nature is also like Narayana, same. Practically almost, Pranayana Dutta, almost like gods. So Prabhupada said they can conceivably call themselves God also, but they never do that. They never do that. Why they never call themselves God? Although they can conceivably do so, and it could be believable also, but they never do that. Why did they never do that? Why did they never do that? Huh? Pure consciousness. Okay, I mean, that covers a lot. It's so broad, you know. Yes, the happiness of devotional service far excels being God. Understand? Bhakti is so... Krishna Dasa Abhimana Ye Ananda Sindhu. The Abhimana, the conception of being Krishna Das, is like a bottomless ocean of Ananda. Understand? Bottomless ocean of bliss. There's no bottom to that ocean. Ocean itself is very big, and it has no bottom also. Such is the happiness experienced in the conception of service. That conception of service of Krishna is so attractive that Vishnu Tattva also wants to understand. Understand? This is mentioned in chapter 6 of the Adi Lila, a very fascinating chapter. The conception of service of Krishna is so intoxicating and so attractive that the Vishnu Tattva also want to understand. What is this Bhakti Tattva? They also want to understand. That's quite remarkable because they're also on the Adokshita plane. But they find the Bhakti Tattva attractive. That's inconceivable. Don't try to logically, how is that possible? Come on. They also find this Bhakti Tattva is very attractive. There's a reason for that, because Krishna tells in the Uddhava Gita, speaking to Uddhava, he says to Uddhava that Lakshmi, Shiva, Brahma, even my brother Sankarsana, and even my own self is not as dear to me as you. You are more dear, Uddhava. You are more dear than my own self. What to speak of those who are in relationship to me, like Balaram, Lakshmi, Brahma, Shiva, he gives a long list of names like that. So then when the Vishnu avatars come to understand this point, really, then what is this position of a bhakta? They also become attracted to the idea. So therefore they appear in Gaur Lila also. They're called as bhakta avatar. Understand? Bhakta avatars. They are Vishnu tattva, so they're descending. But they want to understand what is the position of bhakta and bhakti. So they called us bhakta avatar. Understand? We have a verse like that, bhakta avatar. So the position of bhakti is so wonderful that although the Vishnudutas are almost like Krishna, they can conceivably imitate Krishna also and be believable. They even have powers like Krishna. Not completely, but almost. But they never desire to do so because bhakti is so wonderful, so ecstatic. Understand? So this point is being brought out here. So just as Vishnu is above Yamaraj, the Vishnudutas are above the Yamadutas. They're transcendental. And so also Ajamil was getting their mercy, so he was beyond reproach. Are there any questions mentioned? A few points are mentioned here only. Yes, but I expanded the discussion.
Hare Krishna. You're mentioning the devotee accepts, so the bhakta accepts Bhagavan as his object of worship. Could you speak briefly on the point that then Bhagavan recommends actually worship of the bhakta for the bhakta also? Because that is his mood. He prefers to have his devotees engaged in the service of the devotee, and that actually is more pleasing. So it's like a higher... Anyway.
So what are you asking me to say?
Is there like a... And that still would be considered Bhagavan worship?
Yes. It is a, like I already mentioned, the appearance of one truth means the appearance of all the other truths. Bhakta, Guru, Avatar, Shakti, Prakash, and then God. Lord Chaitanya mentioned Arilila. This verse comes, I mentioned it many times. So there is Ishwara, he is God, and then his constituents. What are the constituents? Shakti, Bhakta, Guru, Avatar, Prakash. Five things are there. And these are all constituents of the Absolute Truth. So Bhakta and Guru, who is also a Bhakta, and they're all constituents of the Absolute Truth. So the appearance of one means the simultaneous appearance of the other. This mention Adi Lila, Chaitanya Chaitanya is mentioned. So yes, worship of Bhakta is a type of Bhagavan worship of sorts, but they also direct our energy towards Krishna. So that's the point. Just like Lord Chaitanya is himself Krishna, but his teaching is to worship Krishna. His teaching is not to worship himself. Of course, Nityananda made a little edit there. I mean, he didn't like, you know, he did. It's not that he didn't like, but he knew what is Lord Chaitanya's position, and he knew Lord Chaitanya is the only hope for the people in Kali Yuga. So he made a little edit. Krishna says, when you go to Bengal, you tell the people to worship Krishna, to chant Krishna's names, to hear Krishna's teachings, Bolo Krishna, Kodo Krishna. But Nityananda edit a little bit, little edit he added. The edit was Bolo Gauranga. Shukra Gauranga, he said like that. He made a little edit, Lord Chaitanya. But the teaching of the Bhakta is always towards Krishna. So it is through them that we have our prospect in worship of God. I told this last class I mentioned maybe a week ago. Beautiful verse Radharani is singing. Beautiful verse that I was seeing Krishna, taking darshan of Krishna. By the time taking darshan of Krishna, I was attacked by two enemies. Two enemies. Someone in the class said a narcissist. I was so disgusted. Not a narcissist. Two enemies attacked me when I was taking darshan of Krishna. Ecstasy and Cupid. And because I was attacked by these two enemies, they stole my darshan away. I was taking darshan, but when I went to ecstasy, I couldn't see Krishna anymore. I was stolen away. So she compared it to enemies. Therefore, instead of trying to see Krishna, instead of worshiping Krishna, I would rather worship time. Because in that time that I was taking darshan, if I can get time to stop by worshiping it, then I can have my Krishna fully without any interruption. In other words, I was explaining. So she's taking darshan, and Baba's running on one side, and Cupid's running on the other side to attack her. But then she begins worshiping time, leaving aside the worship of Krishna, or trying to take darshan of him. She begins to worship time, and causing time to stand still. Then Cupid and ecstasy can't move because time is now standing still. And now she can take darshan of her Krishna as long as she wants, to her full satisfaction. So in this way, we were hearing how the worship of that thing which is in relationship to Krishna is greater because it can get you Krishna also. It's like a buy one, get two free deal. Right? You worship time, you get your Krishna also. So you worship the devotee, Radhadanam Sarvesham Vishnu Radhanam Param, that worship of, in all the Vedic literatures, worship of Vishnu is said to be supreme, but higher than that is Tadiyanam Samarchana, is worship of that which is having its relationship to Krishna. Krishna Sambandha, that which is in relationship to Krishna, is considered of greater importance to the devotee, because that is giving pleasure to Krishna. Understand? Just like Mother Jasoda, there was an obstacle. Should I go for feeding Krishna or taking care of the milk, which is for Krishna's pleasure? Milk I am making for Krishna's pleasure. So I want to please Krishna with this milk. So there was a dilemma, sankat, in her mind, which one I should give preference to. And she gave preference to the milk because it's meant for Krishna's pleasure. So also we may be thinking, oh, I will serve Krishna. I want to please him. But there are so many people already pleasing Krishna. Let me become their assistant. Then I'll be recognized. And so many people are already pleasing Krishna. So who am I? Upstart coming, little sprinkle on the cake, right? That's okay. Andrew Prabhu said like this. If you have a cake, then the little sprinkles in the cake
make it the cake all the more attractive, right? But the cake is the main thing, actually, isn't it? The sprinkle is not the main. If you offer someone some sprinkles, no one, they would be very upset, isn't it? Even if there are a lot of sprinkles there, then it will not bring happiness to the person. The cake is the main thing. Similarly, although there be so many gopis worshiping Krishna, millions of them, if Radha is not there, he's not interested. Such is her position. Radha is like the cake, and everyone else is like the sprinkles. Even the gopis of such exalted position, they like sprinkles, big sprinkles, really tiny sprinkles. But even all those sprinkles put together will not satisfy Krishna. So when Radha left the Rasa dance, so Krishna also left. Oh no, all these gopis are, they cannot give me pleasure. So something is already giving happiness to Krishna. Something, the cake, there's a cake that is already giving happiness to Krishna, and we can become the assistants of such individuals, like sprinkles, adding a little flavor to it, but the main thing is the cake. So then when we realize that something is already giving Krishna happiness, Vaishnavas, they are already giving Krishna happiness, then that may become their assistant. Because that way I can be recognized also. I'll get my Krishna also. Just like Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta has told us, that if I have to take darshan, then let me stand behind some Vaishnava. That way when Krishna is looking at that Vaishnava, his glance will also catch me. He was giving such concept as there, such beautiful idea. Not that immediately you see also in Vrindavan, everyone runs to the front of the altar, move! Krishna, he is not seeing you. Why he should see you? Who are you? Some insignificant ant. Huh? Where are you next to the infinite absolute truth? So Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta gave this point, that let me stand behind some Vaishnava, that way when Krishna's glance catches him, it'll catch me also. That way I'll be recognized. So devotees should think like this, that yeah, so worshiping devotee is a type of Bhagavan worship in the sense that we've mentioned it, because they're one truth. But the idea is that the devotees always, they help us to get Krishna. They direct our energy towards Krishna, they help us to get Krishna. And when we have to worship Krishna, we find we give greater predilection to the worship of the devotee, because there we have our prospect in worship of Krishna. Otherwise, we have no prospect. If you offer Krishna sprinkles, it's not be attractive. And when sprinkles are added to the cake, it's very attractive. So the cake is the main dish. And we can assist, and then we have our prospect also in pleasing Krishna and bringing happiness to Krishna through those servants. So the devotee shall think in this way. He shall think in this way.
May I pursue this a little bit further, or you have another topic you wanted to speak on?
No, I mean, I was hoping I would get to a couple or few verses, but maybe I'll just have to stick to the Vaishnava topic today, since that's the topic of these two verses.
I've heard a particular mood, and I would like to hear your comment, if that's all right.
Fine. Is this in the other building, or is this our guy? Is our guy?
Yeah.
Can someone remind me to tell Dayato, can he come at 9 o'clock or start a little bit later?
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise,
that's a good idea.
It is not that, you know, fixing the temple is the all-important point. That is an important point. But after hearing the class or after the japa period, not before.
Yeah.
Let's see. Maybe it's not possible, so we have to just tolerate. That happens also. We may have to just tolerate it if possible.
So I've heard that one particular devotee was expressing it would be true humility, it seemed, was this proposal. True humility, as you're saying, would not be to aspire to serve Krishna directly or even to enter into the rasa dance directly, but rather let us only be the blade of grass underneath the feet of the gopis as they're dancing with Krishna. That's like.
I mean, that may be one conception or one manifestation of a humble disposition. I personally don't want to be a blade of grass. I mean, I appreciate the sentiment of Uddhava as such. I think the emphasis is more on the humbleness and understanding that my prospect is not in Krishna directly, but through his devotees. But it need not manifest exclusively as a blade of grass. As such, it can manifest in other ways, as an assistant to one of Krishna's devotees, which is how it's normally presented. I think the emphasis is just that my prospect in pleasing Krishna is through his devotees, not directly. And in fact, if I please Krishna's devotees, I will get Krishna's attention more, Because Krishna wants to do so many things for his devotees, but they're not agreeable. Understand? He wants to do so many things for them, but they will not agree to take anything from Bhagavan. This is what it means to really be a devotee. We go to Bhagavan, we have our long list, we roll it out. You know, like our Christmas, we roll it out. Okay, this. Worship does not come anywhere on the list, just so many demands are there. But a real bhakta, he wants nothing whatsoever. Krishna wants to give so many things, he also won't take. But then when a devotee, someone else is serving that devotee, then Krishna should think, I wanted to do that. But it was not allowed. The devotee was not giving me chance, opportunity. But he's giving you chance to do what I wanted to do. Therefore, I'm indebted to you. So then one should think that my prospect in pleasing Krishna comes more in trying to please Vaishnava. So that kind of understanding, I feel, just gives nourishment to the idea that my prospect in pleasing Krishna is actually by bringing pleasure to his devotee. It's giving expression to the idea. It need not literally manifest. It could, but it need not be necessarily, as everyone should be desiring to become a blade of grass if they want to please Krishna. That may not be the case. They may not have the desire. But that doesn't mean they lack that humility. That humility is my prospect in pleasing Krishna is in pleasing Vaishnava. That's what I'm taking from that. Okay, anything else? Any other question? Does that help? Does it? Yeah. Talk to Terrence. I thought I would get much further.
That example,
this topic is fascinating, I guess.
The example you used earlier in class about Cupid playing an enemy, I don't know if you addressed that question, but how was Cupid an enemy in that, like, what role was Cupid playing in the role of being an enemy?
I don't know, actually, to be honest with you. When I read about it, Cupid causes, ecstasy causes self-forgetfulness. You forget yourself completely. She forget that she was taking darshan of Bhagavan. And I don't know how Cupid exactly, nor is that really important for us. How is Cupid disturbing Srimati Radharani? Right now, that's not the most important information to derive from the discussion. The most important aspect of which I was highlighting was that our prospect is in worship of time or Krishna Sambandha, that which is in relationship to Vishnu or Krishna. Then we can get our Krishna also, otherwise we can't. So I don't know how Cupid was disturbing Srimati Radharani. I'm not so advanced. If I become advanced and I ask her, I'll let you know. Srimati Radharani, how is Cupid disturbing you? You know, you played like this in CC, it was coming. When I ask her, I'll let you know, huh? Yeah, any other question? Yes. Derek wants to say something.
The last point in this verse about the devotee being wandering the earth completely independent. Yes. I was wondering how that's the case, because it seems that both the devotee and Bhagavan are both completely captured and bound by love. So what does it mean by independence in this context?
Oh, here, is in this context, it means Vishnu Dutas is like Narada Muni, they can just move around. Nothing is impeding their movement in the material world. So they're free to move around however they like as such in the material world. In other words, no aspect of the material nature can check them. That's context here. Yes, they can be checked by their love for each other, but they can't be checked by the material nature in any way. Vishnu Dutas and Krishna, their forms are completely transcendental, you know, etc.
What about in like the absolute sense, what does independence mean? Because we often hear that.
Like, they're completely free to serve Krishna however they like. See, in the material world, this is brought up in the Brihadbhagavatamrita. I often like to bring this up also. In the material world, there's some restriction because you have a material body. And the body can't do anything and everything. But in the spiritual world, or with a spiritual body, the capacity for pleasing Krishna is magnified in the sense that forms can transform to please Krishna. Sometimes they transform their bodies. Their forms can expand in order to serve Krishna. But you cannot do that in the material body. So in Brihadbhagavatamrita, it's brought up twice. Once in the first part, once in the second part. That although devotees who have prema, that is the self-attainment of Godhead. Whether you are in the spiritual world or the material world, if you attain prema, you are back home, back to Godhead. But still, even those who have prema in this material world, they still, it is seen in certain cases that they will hanker to go to the spiritual world. Because in the spiritual world, there is complete freedom to serve Krishna however they like. Whereas in the material world, there's some restriction because they have material bodies. The material bodies can't do anything and everything. So in that sense, they're completely free to serve Krishna however they like. And Krishna freely reciprocates with them. There's no impediments to that. And the apparent impediments that seem to come up in some of the pastimes we hear about is just to augment the exchange. It is never really an impediment. It's for sweetening the interaction. Understand? Yeah. Chinmay, is that good? Chinmay has most to say. I feel like this class is zoomed right past. The time is just zoomed right past. I still have one more verse I'm going to cover. It's this short paragraph anyway. Yeah.
So even if the Yamdutas were defeated by the Vishnudutas, but still they find their personality very manohar, very attractive.
Well, Yamaraj does at least.
not the Vishnu.
Yamaraj is telling.
Okay. But even the Yamdutas also explained that they are very beautiful.
Later, yes, they explained that. That means they can understand. That beauty wasn't so much a compliment. It was more a recognition that these are celestial entities. That's what Prabhupada particularly brought out. It wasn't so much like a glorification, like you're so beautiful and wonderful. And it was more like, obviously you're not of Ajamil's category. You're something very special. And you look like, by your features, we could tell you're something celestial. And therefore, outside of our jurisdiction. But if you are in that position, then why are you impeding us? Then you should know this is a sinful man. He deserves to be taken to hell. Why are you stopping us? So that was not so much a glorification. It was just like a self-evident. It's self-evident. If you see if you see anyone from the spiritual world, they're drop dead gorgeous, literally, literally. If the gopis come, just like this pastime comes with Shamananda, where he finds the bracelet of Radharani. And then Lalita wants to get it back. Shamananda's in a corporeal body like ours. And so Lalita comes as an old lady, like an old hag. And she says, give me back the foot anklet. It is my mistress's. But Shamananda was suspicious. He suspect something so opulent as this. This must belong to someone very special. So he said, how can I trust you? So that time, he said, prove. He wanted some evidence that it was the case. Let's just say I can show you my real form, but if you see it, you won't be able to handle the beauty. You won't be able to handle it. So the gopis, anyway, gopis, anybody in the spiritual world is literally drop dead gorgeous. And you know, if Radharani comes before us right now, and then you'll wake up and again see her. Literally drop dead gorgeous. Understand? Finished. Such are the forms of this in the spiritual world. They're very exquisite. So in other words, so when the Yamadutas saw the Vishnudutas, it was obvious that you, self-evident, you are great personalities. But then why are you impeding us? So that was less of a glorification, whereas Yamaraj is with knowledge, so it's more of a glorification.
The false ego was defeated by the Vishnudutas.
Yes, of course. Because the Vishnudutas stopped them.
Okay.
So that's pretty humbling to the false ego. False ego means you think you have unimpeded movement. I'll do as I like, when I like, and so on. At least in their case, I'm going to follow my duties, of course. But then they were impeded. They were impeded from doing so. So that's a little humbling. It's like we want to do something. We want to go on some trip. And we asked the Tumor President, can I go? And he says, no. Isn't it? Immediately you become upset. I mean, I know it's going to happen to me in a minute. So they're like that. Yes, their ego was, they were humbled. All right, I'm going to do the next verse, only one verse. It also glorifies Vaishnava, so same thing. Bhagavan was discussed, now Vaishnava is being discussed. Bhakta. Bhutani Vishnu Surapujitani Durdasha Lingani Mahadbhutani Rakshanti Tat Bhakti Mata Parebhyo
Matascha Maritian Atrasarvatascha.
Sorry, I was looking at the retort meaning. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The order carriers of Lord Vishnu, who are worshipped even by the demigods, possess wonderful bodily features, exactly like those of Vishnu, are very rarely seen. The Vishnu Dutas protect the devotees of the Lord from the hands of enemies, from envious persons, and even from my jurisdiction, as well as from natural disturbances. Purport. Yamaraj has specifically described the qualities of the Vishnu Dutas to convince his own servants not to be envious of them. Yamaraj warned the Yamadutas that the Vishnu Dutas are worshipped with respectful obeisances by the demigods and are always very alert to protect the devotees of the Lord from the hands of enemies, from natural disturbances, and from all dangerous conditions in this material world. Sometimes the members of the Krishna Consciousness Society are afraid of the impending danger of world war and ask what would happen to them if a war should occur. In all kinds of danger, they should be confident of their protection by the Vishnu Dutas of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Kaunteya Pratijanihi Name Bhakta Pranashati. Material danger is not meant for devotees. This is also confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Patam padam yavi padam nitesham. In this material world, there are dangers at every step, but they are not meant for devotees who have fully surrendered unto the lotus feet of the Lord. The pure devotees of Lord Vishnu may rest assured of the Lord's protection, and as long as they are in this material world, they should fully engage in devotional service by preaching the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Krishna, namely the Hare Krishna movement of Krishna consciousness. So the description of Vishnu Dutas is continued here. It is said here, Sura Pujitani, they are worshipped by the devatas. Even the demigods are worshipping them. And Durdashalingani, they are very rare to see. Very rarely you will be able to see a Vishnu Duta or a Vaishnava in general. Just like how many people are sitting here in the temple room. So very rare to see any Vaishnava, any Vishnu Duta especially, very rare to see. Very rare to see. Also, you cannot see them without bhakti generally. And Mahat Adbhutani. Abhuta means wonderful. So Maha Abhuta, they're greatly wonderful. So they're worshipped by demigods, greatly wonderful, very rare to see. Rakshantita Bhakti Mata Parebhyo. And then they protect those who have devotion to God. Those who are devoted to God, they protect them from all sorts of dangers. Parebhya, it says it, Parebhya, from others who are inimical to them, Vishnudas will give protection. Mataha, Vishnudas will give protection even from me or my order carriers, Yamadutas. And from everything and anything else, Atta Sarvatascha, anything in general. Vishnudas will give protection. So if one becomes a devotee, not only do you get the protection of the Supreme Lord, but you get the protection of the Supreme Lord's devotees also, understand? If you become a bhakta, so much facility is there when you become a bhakta. If you're a gyani, yogi, karmi, then where is the support? No support. Gan, mark, you have to do, primarily it should be done alone. There is some little sanghas there, but that's not for sadhu sangha. Mostly it is done by oneself. Gan mark is supposed to, as far as scripturally, scriptural-based Ganmark, not the mental speculation that goes on today, but scripturally-based Ganmark should be done in isolation, solitude. So what happens if you become weak? Where's the support? Huh? Oh, well, guess you weren't strong enough to make it. Same with Yoga Mark. Yoga Mark, you're supposed to go to the forest, not to downtown Chicago, where everyone's wearing leotards. It had nothing to do with sense control. Yoga is supposed to be sense control. Yoga means the destruction of the permutations of the mind. You know, the chitta, how the mind is moving, taking all these different shapes, causing us bewilderment. Yoga is to end all of that. But they go to the city in the yoga class and it causes more permutations. Wild, all sorts of wild permutations come up, you go. That is not yoga mark. Real yoga mark, you're supposed to go to the forest. Which you cannot do unless you have sufficient realization of the difference between matter and spirit. You'll be afraid. You'll be afraid. You go to the forest. You will sit down to meditate, and you will hear mom grizzly bears coming like that. Immediately, your meditation is disturbed. What was that? You'd not be able to concentrate. You're saying, okay, again, bear is not there. You'll go for meditation. Then you'll immediately, you see some cobras coming. You'll be too much afraid. Unless you realize you're different from matter, you'll be too much afraid. And then you'll be meditating, and all of a sudden you'll think of your ex-girlfriend or, you know, previous wife. Then you become extremely lusty. Then what is the protection? You finish, immediately finish. Nothing you can do. So yoga mark, gan mark, you're in isolation generally. If you become weak, finish. No protection, no support. And karma mark is useless from the beginning to end. So much difficulty, so much trouble. And no protection also. Because everyone is after their own sense gratification and karma mark. So in fact, if you're not successful, they feel joyous. Yes, now I'll be in the lead. I'll get the first position. So karma mark, gan mark, yoga mark, all there's no support and no protection. Here is saying that if you are bhakti, if you have bhakti for Bhagavan, not only do you get the mercy of the Lord, but perhaps even more importantly, you get the mercy of Lord's devotees, Vishnu Dutas, Vaishnavas. They come to give support. So here he's discussed them. They're very rare. They're worshipped by demigods. They're wonderful, which is probably not so interesting to us, but very interesting for us. Rakshantita Bhakti Mataparit. They give protection from those who are inimical, from Yamaraj, and from all other sorts of natural disturbances that may take place. I have another point to make, but you can ask your question.
It says, Yamaraj has specifically described the qualities of the Vishnu Dutas to convince his own servants not to be envious of him.
Yes.
Isn't he just glorifying them? Wouldn't that make them more envious?
Yes. Well, I guess we have to take it for granted that they have a little faith in him. And so, generally, if we hear the glories of someone else, we become more fired up, more messed up in the head. We find it intolerable. But in the case of the Yamadutas, apparently, they didn't find it intolerant. Also, like I said earlier on, there was already a acceptance of their exalted position. It wasn't like they were denying that. There wasn't a problem in acknowledging their greatness because they themselves had done so because it was self-evident. It was obvious. Huh? I wouldn't say it was exactly humility. I mean, I don't know if we normally think of a Yamaduta as being humble as such. But the point is more that it was obvious that this person is a very... Sometimes generally what envy comes up between parties that are more closely situated to you. Like generally, if someone is so much more exalted than you, you don't become so envious because it's obvious. There's no competition there. But when someone is a little bit closer to you and you think you can take them over and they're beating you, then you become envious, understand? If someone is so much greater than you, just like if someone starts speaking about Prahlad Maharaj, no one gets envious. Or Sanatana Goswami, everyone's like, yes, they're pure devotees, it's obvious. But if someone starts talking about Bhakti Derek, and then immediately, or say Bhakti Jordan, because he came after you to the play. So someone starts glorifying Bhakti Jordan, that he is this and that and this and that, immediately your eyes become red, and your face becomes red, you become upset. But if someone starts talking about Rompa Maharaj or Radha Maharaj, some sannyasi, no one gets envious. Oh, yes, it is obvious. He is very exalted. But if someone talks about the Jordan, immediately you start shaking a little bit. They say, Prabhu, why are you shaking? Why are you looking so... I'm having some headache right now, hearing all these glories. It's too much for me. You understand? When someone is close to you, that's generally when the envy comes up. But when someone is so much more exalted than you, unless you're an atheist, then generally you don't get envious. You have to acknowledge it's so self-evident. So in the case of the Yamadutas, it was obvious that they were exalted individuals. They acknowledged it themselves. But they were just upset that the order of Yamaraj was transgressed because they were thinking he was the supreme authority and so on. That was what was really disturbing them. So now by hearing about God and hearing about Vaishnavas, their envy will come down. The word being used here is envy. The disturbance in the mind will be placated by hearing about their exalted position, and also the position of bhakti. Understand? If someone is so much exalted, you will not become envious so easily, usually. Only when someone is close by. So anyway, the point is that by becoming a bhakta, you get the protection of not only the Supreme Lord, but of Bhagavan's devotees. the support of the Vishnu Dutas, Yama Dutas. Now here, Prabhupada's giving an example of devotees complaining about war, what would take place when war happens. And Prabhupada says material calamity is not for devotee. But then question comes, but we see devotees are experiencing material calamity. At least apparently so, isn't it? Apparently they're experiencing so much material calamity. Where is the protection? Where is the protection? That question comes up. Isn't it? That question comes up. So what does it mean to be confident in the protection of the Supreme Lord? This point we also mentioned earlier. To be confident in the Supreme Lord, confident in the Supreme Lord's protection is one of the angas of Sharanagati. Sharanagati means what? Surrender. Surrender has six aspects to it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. One of the six aspects is having full faith or trust, vishwasa, that Krishna will give protection. Now, Jiva Goswami, when he's discussing Sharanapati or Sharanagati surrender in Bhakti Sandarbha, he quotes a verse from the Bhagavatam. What does it mean that the Supreme Lord gives protection? This is the verse he quotes. I don't remember that. I have to get the location, but this is the essence of the verse. That whatever is happening to me is by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Now, how does that verse and protection match? Whatever is happening to me is by the grace of the Supreme Lord. That's the verse that he quotes for having full confidence in the protection of the Supreme Lord. Seems a little bit weird, right? Protection, we think, oh, some danger is coming, the Lord will save me. But the way the devotee's mentality is, according to Bhaktisandarbha, is that whatever is happening to me is the protection, is the mercy of the Supreme Lord. That is that confidence in the protection of the Supreme Lord. Understand? It is not that, oh, no harm shall come to me, but rather that whatever is happening to me is the mercy of the Supreme Lord. I posted something on my blog yesterday on this particular point that was very nice. It's a picture of like a ninja facing this gigantic, larger-than-life bear, grizzly bear. And there's a quote there that I really appreciated, which speaks about how when a soldier goes off to war, then the environment is not up to his whim. In other words, it's not like a video game where you can choose your battlefield. You know, I often mention that in video games. These fighting games, you can choose what battlefield that you want to play on. But when a soldier goes off to war, he cannot choose his battlefield. The battlefield will come upon him, and he has to be ready for that. Whatever the battlefield looks like, he has to be ready for that. Otherwise, he has no real faith in his cause. Right? This is a very beautiful point. If he has real faith in his cause, oh, you're looking at the picture. So if he has real faith in his cause, the cause that he's fighting for, then whatever battlefield comes before him, he is ready for that. Understand? If he doesn't have faith in his cause, then the battlefield looks a little scary, he runs. He gets out of there as soon as possible. But if he has real faith in the cause for which he's fighting for, then whatever the battlefield looks like, he is ready for that. Understand? So similarly, devotees shall think in this way, that the Lord is actually in control of the environment. Not only is he in control of the environment, you may even think the Lord himself has come before me as the environment. Understand? Parashat Maharaj prayed like this. First Canto, chapter 19. Parashat Maharaj said, the Lord has kindly appeared before me in the form of a curse of a Brahmana boy. Understand? He saw the environment as Krishna himself coming before him. Why has Krishna come before him in that way? Parashat Maharaj said, to make me detach from low level householder life. He was speaking humbly. So the Lord has come to me in the form of that environment in order to extricate me from the material world. Understand? So the Lord will certainly give us protection means this. That doesn't mean that the environment will always be palatable for our liking to the mind. Understand? The Lord may come in the form of grizzly bear. You see my picture, grizzly bear. It's a nice picture, you see. He pulled it up. You can see it. Everyone look, it's a good picture. Maybe you could click on the picture and it will become bigger. Nice picture, isn't it? So the grizzly bear represents Krishna, actually, in my explanation, understand? Krishna has come before us in the form of the environment, and if we have real faith in the cause of Krishna consciousness, such was the statement that's quoted there, then we'll be ready for that, whatever the battlefield comes. So that confidence shall come in a devotee. Certainly I will not perish, even if the environment is looking unfavorable. This is the mentality of one who is surrendered to God. Otherwise, you will always complain. There will always be something to complain about. Material world is full of fault.
ocean of faults, especially in Kali Yuga. So having confidence in the Lord's protection, the support of devotees. What is the support of devotees? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, when asked by a man, man's son was dying. So the man, actually, Bhaktisiddhanta, he was an atheist. He said, you are a saint, you are a man of God. Why don't you ask God for to save my son? To which Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said something very, perhaps, shocking. I should actually, I need that. I would like to say verbatim. I don't remember verbatim. But he said, I will not petition. How did he put it? Do you remember Advaita Shrine? I will not make a petition against the will of the Lord. A campaign. He used the word campaign. I will not make a campaign against the will of the Lord. That's what he told this man. Man's son is dying. He asked him, you are a man of God. You asked God to save my son. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, I will not make a campaign against the will of the Lord. I will try to change your vision. Now, generally, we might say that sounds a little insensitive. In other words, he's saying that it is the will of the Lord that your son dies, and I will not make a campaign against the will of the Lord. I will try to change your vision, your outlook. Ouch. It's a little humbling. A little humbling. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta goes on to explain later on, not to this man, but he's speaking to another party, that the Lord's protection means this, that the Lord has kindly sent millions of obstacles in my way in order to protect me from myself. Protect me from my consciousness, which is running out in the material world. Understand? So we should understand protection like this when we're looking at devotees' lives, and their lives seem to be filled with material difficulty. Although Prabhupada says here they'll be protected from material danger, is not for them. It is not material danger anymore. It is actually Krishna coming in the environment to drag his devotee back home, back to Godhead. Prabhupada uses like, understand? This is an important topic. It can be expand it more, but we'll keep it at that. I'll not make a campaign against the will of the Lord. That was mind-boggling information. Anyone, do you want to say something, Shamai Prabhu? You had a question. Yes. Yes. Yes.
The meaning of protection is bringing closer the devotee towards the God. That is the protection.
Yes, yes, simple. See, oftentimes when we come to Krishna consciousness, we have to redefine so many words. Just like compassion. Compassion was a word that was very popular as a mode of goodness, moralist, virtuous person. But when you come to Krishna consciousness, that word had to be redefined. Humility had to be redefined. So many things have to be redefined when you come to Krishna consciousness. So also protection, we have to redefine. Redefine. In our mind, protection means no harm shall come to us. But that is not the meaning. Another definition is given. So we have to see what are the definitions given by Guru and God. Guru and God and Shastra, not by our minds. Whatever is in our mind is a misconception. It will lead us to continue birth and death. But whatever Guru, God, Shastra, Sadhu, whatever they are saying, that is proper understanding. At least we are having that faith. We think in this way. Any other questions, comments? So we heard about Bhagavan, now we heard about Bhakta. Now next section coming up, we will hear about Bhakti. So very simple. This line of thought is very smooth. Line of thought is coming. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shelter. So it means the form which Bhakti is shelter. The way I try to create the image is the house of Bhakti. The house of Bhakti means where Bhakti.